The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Hi there, it's Pat Kenny here. I'm excited to tell you that our new weekend morning show is almost upon us. And I want to thank you for your patience as we ensure that everything is just so. Every Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m, I'll be setting the agenda for your weekend, blending engaging guests with news and current affairs and a sprinkling of culture in the mix as well. And to keep up with everything on the show, all you have to do is keep following this very podcast feed, either on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts. Until then, please enjoy some more from the deep archive of the last dozen years of weekday mornings. Now, the impact of sports documentary series has become apparent in the last 5 years, with the Formula One documentary series Drive to Survive perhaps an unlikely hit for Netflix. Let's have a listen.
These guys have an almost fighter pilot mentality, and that's what separates them from mere mortals.
All I ever do is pray for a safe race. I never thought that I'd be there one day watching my son.
For me, it's heart attack after heart attack.
Are you okay, Nico?
Get me out, there's fire,
Well, that was a really thrilling series, the first series of Drive to Survive on Netflix. But it's not just Formula One that's been infiltrated. Tennis also in Matchpoint.
The hardest thing in sports is expectation. We've been blessed with an era of greatness. Roger, Rafa, Serena, Novak.
Who will take their place?
And then the world of golf in full swing.
There is a power struggle going on in golf.
You've got this existential threat to the game of golf in a Saudi-backed league called LIV Golf.
They're throwing astronomical money at people, and everything's got a price, I guess.
The PGA Tour is the best place to play golf, but the game needs to be pushed forward.
Well, to talk about the impact, the commercial effect, and the template that Netflix have adopted in accelerating all of this sports coverage, I'm joined now by CEO of Sport for Business, Rob Hartnett. Rob, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, moments in time, Formula One, the rivalry between Lewis Hamilton and Verstappen was probably key.
It was, and we've always known that sport was capable of producing the most dramatic storylines, but it always happened on the track, and we never really got inside the helmet, or we never got inside the characters that populate the sport. Who could have imagined that we would be as familiar with the team principal of Team Haas, Gunther Steiner, and his occasional F-bomb 5 years ago? But now we are, and what Netflix have done and their production team, and we caught a glimpse of it just listening to those clips there, they've really brought the art of storytelling to a sport which is capable of generating great stories, but they've gone deeper.
Formula One drivers always appeared in the past to be automatons. I mean, we got behind the personalities of some of the biggest names, you know, the Michael Schumachers and so on. And locally, we got to know Eddie Irvine because he was obviously from Ireland and so on and so forth. Eddie Jordan, the same. But we got to know even the minor drivers, the fellows who were lucky to have a seat.
Yeah, very much so. I think one of the things that they've done is they've actually redefined what winning is, particularly for an American audience. So Verstappen and Hamilton, they would have carved up championships between them. Last year, there was only five drivers won individual races. But of the 20 drivers on the grid, we know them all now. And we know their personalities, we know their characters, and they've become superstars in a way that they could never have dreamt of just from sitting in the cockpit of their car.
Now, they're superstars in our minds, but if they don't win, they don't necessarily keep the seat number one, and they don't necessarily get a sponsor. So it's a double-edged sword.
It's a big part of the drama, the switch of Fernando Alonso, the story of Oscar Piastri at the start of this season in Series 5 were two of the key storylines in there. And what it does is that it elevates the teams that would normally be battling for a mid-table position into people that you can really root for. And that has had a hugely dramatic impact on the sport.
Now, many people play tennis in this country, but it's fair to say it would still be, relatively speaking, a minority sport. Watching the tennis as Netflix produced it was wonderful, because although I play tennis, I know the scoring and so on, you could watch it without knowing how the game works at all.
You could indeed, and part of that breakpoint, and the same with Full Swing, and indeed the same with Drive to Survive, is the fact that we actually, if you counted up the minutes that we're actually watching the sport as part of these documentaries, it would probably come to less than 10% of the actual programming. Whereas when we're watching live sport, that's all we're watching. So this has really brought us behind. It's brought us behind Nick Kyrgios. Great way to start off the breakpoint series.
That was fabulous, yeah.
It really was. And just getting, trying to get inside the mind, well, I'm not sure that we ever would get inside his mind, but trying to just see the way that he sees the world was, you know, it was incredible from a storytelling point of view, and it undoubtedly helped people to actually come to the sport, whether to play, to watch, to buy the merch.
But the narrative there, and it's not really a spoiler because it's all in the annals of tennis, Nick is going for his home open win, and as a singles player he fails, and then he doubles up with his doubles partner, they have great crack, and they go on and win the bloody thing.
Well, it's pure Hollywood. We saw it even this weekend with the boys that taken over Wrexham. 96th minute penalty save. Sport does that, yeah. But it needs the right person behind the camera pointing it at it, telling the story in a way that makes it much more accessible to people that would not necessarily be as technically aware.
Now, in Full Swing with golf, again, you have a drama that is separate entirely to the actual on-course drama, and that is LIV Golf.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't have picked a better year to do it. It was very much in the eyes of golf fans, but it was also breaking through. It was breaking through onto programmes like yours. You were talking about golf probably more in the course of the last 12 months than you've ever done in the past. And what they did was they landed at the right time. There was also the drama as to whether Rory McIlroy, who was, obviously in our minds, he's the global superstar, but there was a doubt over whether he was going to actually take part. And we didn't know almost right up until the end that he actually was going to play a fairly key role in the actual programming.
Yeah, and he was very outspoken on LIV Golf. I mean, he took on some heavy hitters in criticising LIV Golf. Now, the template that Netflix uses, we await the Six Nations series, which, because we already know many of the characters, so it'll be interesting to see how they come across given the Netflix treatment. But the template they use, it's a series and it's limited in time, and every episode tends to have a different focus.
It is. And, you know, it's in a sense, it's following the whole sporting routine. Like every GAA game lasts for 70 minutes. Every rugby match lasts for 80 minutes. Every football match lasts for 90 minutes. That sense of a beginning, a middle and an end is really important. And they've captured that. The beauty as well is that they've retained editorial control completely. So we might know exactly the story as it unfolded in this year's Six Nations and it finished gloriously for Ireland. But we don't know how the Netflix camera is going to have viewed that and how it's going to look slightly different. Mm. On the edit suite.
So there could be moaning and whining about England having a player sent off and how that really they should have won that match, da da da. Ireland should never have been Grand Slam champions, da da da.
You started this chat by talking about the moments in time, and we don't know what the moments in time that Netflix will deem to be the most important until we actually see them on screen.
Now, one of the extraordinary things from the tennis series particularly was the nomadic lifestyle of the players. I mean, you know, suitcases strewn all over the hotel room, trying to, you know, if you're not one of the top players, maybe doing your own laundry and drying it in the bath.
And very individual as well. Like in Formula One, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be the same in the Six Nations as well, you've got that team ethic around you. So the drivers, literally, they know where their scooter is going to be when they get out of the car. They know that everything is going to be planned to perfection. But in tennis, much more individual. They're travelling with maybe one or two coaches, even at the top level. But they are. We're seeing inside the hotel rooms. We're looking at, in a sense, the mundanity of performing at the very highest level of sport. Everything beyond that 2 hours that you're on court.
One of the things that is etched on my mind after watching the Breakpoint series was Rafa Nadal warming up before a match, right, you know, waiting to go on. And utterly intimidating for his opponent.
Completely.
Dancing up and down and strutting his stuff. And I don't think it is a deliberate intimidation. It's just what he does because he's full of nervous tics.
Yeah, it would have been lovely to have actually seen a psychologist's perspective on that, the sort of the pulling and the dragging and the hair and the band and everything else that he does, which we're so familiar with. But, you know, that's what this kind of storytelling does. And we've seen it in Ireland as well. Like we had the Blues Sisters documentary on following the Dublin ladies football team back in 2017. That gave rise to a huge surge in interest there. And even in a cultural perspective, when Donald O'Cusack produced a documentary on Coming Out of the Curve back in 2015, it aired only 4 months before the marriage referendum, and the fact of him coming out as a gay man in sport was perhaps hugely important in terms of that cultural sense of translating what happens on the pitch to what happens in the real world.
Now, let's talk about the fan impact and whether it boosted audiences for any of these sports.
Let me throw some numbers at you. In the United States, which is the key market for sport on a global basis, Formula One prior to Drive to Survive had one race, took place in Austin, the track of the Americas. And the year before Drive to Survive, they had 240,000 people there. Good numbers, but it was one race in the country. Now, after Drive to Survive, they moved up in year two. They had 400,000 people in Austin. They built a new track in Miami around the Hard Rock Stadium there. Again, 400,000 people. And this year, they're already building a track in Las Vegas. The audience, the average age of a Formula One fan has been reduced from 36 years of age to 32 years of age, which is only 4 years. But in demographic terms, that is a huge shift. And the other thing is, well, you know, could that have been Drive to Survive? Could it have been just the excitement of the sport? 74% of those under the age of 35 rate Drive to Survive as being a key factor in why they are now interested in Formula One. That's incredible.
Okay, so that's discernible with tennis, probably less so, because most of the key matches, whether it's Roland Garros or Wimbledon, they're sold out anyway, so you can't get a bigger live audience.
I think so, yeah. I think you probably look at those sports where there is a greater level of participation, there's being going to be less of an upswing in it. I mean, Formula One, there's only 20 people in a year that will actually be driving Formula One cars. That's never going to be you or I. But in the other sports, it can still just create that longer term engagement, because sport is competitive. If rugby is on top, if football is on top, if Gaelic games are on top, they're all trying to sort of nudge ahead of each other, and this does it for them.
That's all about money. So, what difference has exposure of these sports in the Netflix template, what difference has it made to resources, the money piling in and sponsorship?
You could probably put as many zeros on the end of any number as you could the audience figures that they're attracting for this. It has been instrumental in turning, you know, turnover in the sport from, you know, it is pretty much doubled. So the sponsorship revenue that teams are actually able to bring in without having to do anything additional other than just make sure that the car is pointing in the right direction.
Eyeballs on the sport means the sponsors are charged accordingly.
Increased engagement, increased merchandise, all of which has got the sponsor's logo on it. Everything that was there in place as part of the sponsor's contract is there now, but it's at a multiple of 4 or 5. Like Drive to Survive was a top 10 show in 56 countries around the world. This is a global phenomenon.
Now, it's interesting that it's big at the moment, Formula One. Sometimes, though, it can be like watching paint dry. You know, if there are no overtaking opportunities, it can be tedious. And when you've got someone like Verstappen, who seems to be fairly dominant, we're looking to minor characters. And Alonso's not really a minor character. I mean, he's a fabulous racer, but he's a minor character because he's old by Formula One standards, you know, and therefore, if he does something, it's fantastic.
It is, yeah. There is perhaps a whiff of ageism about that. Isn't he doing great, you know, for an old fella? But
But your reaction times would probably fade a bit with age.
I saw one interesting statistic in that, you know, 80% of a driver's mindset is on the drive and 20% on the strategy of the drive. In Alonso, that's almost flipped, that his mind, the way that it works is that he's always thinking 3 laps ahead. So he's obviously pretty good at just doing things by instinct. Hopefully that will continue as well.
All right. So he's the one playing chess, the others are playing checkers.
Pretty much.
Now, overexposure. And it's something that I noticed over the years. We all used to watch snooker a lot on television, and it was very exciting. Then we got too much of it. We all used to watch show jumping a lot on television. We got too much of it. I suspect we're doing that with soccer at the moment, with football, because every night of the week there's a match on, and where it used to be when your team was playing must watch, it's no longer quite that, and we can just go on to YouTube and see the goals the next morning.
Very true, and it could get to a point. The Premier League are already talking in England now about the possibility of them becoming broadcasters in the same way as the GAA and RTE have produced GAA Go, potentially the Premier League going down that route as well. So it all becomes on demand. We talk about overexposure, but we're looking at it through a very simple lens of Ireland and the UK.
Yeah.
The number of people that are watching a Premier League football match now compared to what it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago, again, is a multiple of thousands because it's being broadcast all around the world. It may be taking place in West London or in South Manchester.
Even if the domestic audience was to wane a bit, as far as the Premier League is concerned, they're thinking, well, we're selling this to 50 territories.
It all comes down to the money, is what you said in the beginning, and the money of an Indonesian football fan is just as valuable as the money of an Irish or an English football fan.
My goodness, it's an education talking to you, Rob. Thank you very much for joining us. Rob Hartnett, who's CEO of Sport for Business.